Well, the Queen Victoria Market in Melbourne is one of the treasures of that city. It's a series of large 19th century sheds in which there are hundreds of storeholders selling fruit and veggies and clothing and cheap watches and bakers and butchers, and there are people selling donuts. And now the Melbourne Festival is there too. You'll find art installations and even an experimental radio station. They're part of the Public Art Melbourne Biennial Lab, which is quite a mouthful. The Public Art Melbourne Biennial Lab, it's set up by the City of Melbourne, or it was set up by the City of Melbourne back in June, with international and local artists. They call them local art provocateurs. And back in June is when Fiona Gruber got a preview.
Any bag you like, $2, come and get it, it's all fresh.
Well, here we are at the bustling Queen Victoria Market, right in the heart of Melbourne. And I'm going to find out about a laboratory for artists that has been set up among the fruit and veg. To get an idea about what's going on, I've tracked down co-curator Natalie King and Claire Doherty from the UK. She's a pioneer in new ideas about public art.
Beautiful Sabbath from Tasmania. All Australia.
Why are you here at the Victoria Market, Claire?
Well, I'm co-convening a lab. Now, that sounds sort of very academic language, but effectively what it means is I'm running a kind of hothouse for artists with my colleague David Cross and Natalie King. And it's a really interesting, different kind of way of commissioning public art. We've brought all the artists together for a very intense couple of weeks here in the warehouse just by Queen Victoria Market. And the idea is that they go deep into all of the histories and ideas and people here who are running the market. So rather than commissioning an artist, them coming up with a proposal and going off and developing it in their studio, they're right here working on site with us for 2 weeks. And I've been brought in because I have a sort of 20-year history of commissioning public art in different kinds of ways. And it's been a real eye-opener. Yeah.
Now, you were awarded an MBE for your services to public art. You've got radical ideas about art, haven't you? And it's the total opposite of what people call plonk art, which is the statue in the middle of the square.
Yeah, well, I think it's one of those things. If you said to most people, what do you think of when you imagine public art? They would think a large-scale monumental sculpture outside some swanky foyer. And I think over a period of time, what I've become incredibly excited about is how what happens when you invite artists to work directly in public space or in unconventional spaces outside of museums and galleries. And what you see happen is extraordinary encounters where people's imaginations are ignited, where you see very familiar surroundings in completely different ways, where new connections are formed. So I like to think of public art in its widest sense, but also I like to play with public time. So often we think of public space and location and where the art's going to go, but we don't often think about how the art might be experienced over time. And what we see happening now is that publics are very, very sophisticated and confident in their understanding of cultural experiences. So they're really up for new experiences and events. So I think what we've begun to test out is actually commissioning artists for temporary projects that might last just 24 hours. Or, for example, we just finished a work in Oslo which will last for 100 years, which commissions a new writer every year for 100 years. So I think it's really interesting to start to shake up what we think of as public art, because artists can really contribute to our cities in different ways.
Well, thanks, Claire. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
$65,
please. Here's curator Natalie King. So how did this project come about, Natalie?
Well, it evolved from the City of Melbourne's laneway commissions, which ceased, and then the public art program was reimagined with this new initiative. And I was brought in and offered an array of sites, and the Queen Victoria Market was the most irresistible site because it was established in 1878 and the council was established with a mandate to manage Melbourne's consortium of markets. So markets are quintessential to Melbourne, and it has the most interesting history of waves of migration, of racketeering, of peep shows, of vagrants. There's a very interesting Indigenous history here, and I thought all these layers would be very fertile territory for artists to be exploring.
This is a biennial, so is there going to be another laboratory in 2 years' time in another location in Melbourne? Is that the plan?
Yes. The City of Melbourne has committed to realising 3 Melbourne Biennial Labs, and this is the first one, and they'll be on a 2-year cycle. So it's an enormous commitment from the city to ensure that there's some longevity to this new concept.
Now, your array of experts, you have Gideon Abarsnick, the former director of Chunky Mover, great choreographer, and Robin Anir, he's a historian. Who else have you got on board to kind of really fertilise the minds of all these artists?
The people that are coming in are really acting as provocateurs or triggers rather than educators. So we've also had Veronica Kent from the Telepathy Project, and she did a dreaming workshop with the artists where she gave each of the artists a different archival image from the market. She asked them to sleep with the image under their pillow, record their dream, relay their dream, and then go and find that particular site in the market and draw it.
Now, that's a beautiful idea, because we could all do that, you know, pick a spot in your own town, put a picture under your pillow. I think that's fantastic. So what have they come up with, the artists?
The artists are at this really crucial phase in the lab where ideas are starting to be harnessed, and they're drawing on some of the stories. A lot of artists are interested in the histories of the market. Some are interested in the materials of the market. There's a lot of material here. Other artists are interested in the sounds of the market. It's a very voluble place here. There's spruiking, there's noise, there's crowds. So how do artists make a space for their work in this kind of environment?
It's time to talk to some of the artists, and here's Timothy Moore, who I've managed to catch between deep thoughts. Hello, Timothy.
Hello. Yes, you've caught me in deep thoughts. I don't even know what time of day it is at the moment. I'm in this kind of 10-day workshop, and you kind of lose your sense being here.
Now, you've got an architectural background, so are we going to expect some sort of structure?
Yeah, that's correct, but it's quite interesting because I have an architecture practice called Sibling, and when we create architecture, we're always thinking about how architecture can be useful, how we can improve the built environment. Now, coming into an art context, it's completely different. So I'm interested, well, Sibling, we're going to design an architecture folly, and an architecture folly is a useless piece of architecture. So we're interested in how this useless piece of architecture can become purposeful.
How useless is useless? What kind of uselessness are you interested in?
Well, I'll go back to the historical roots of the architectural folly, this kind of useless architecture. So it comes from, I guess, the 18th and 19th century, and it's the idea of domesticating military fortifications or civic infrastructure. So actually making these big scale things very minute and kind of playful. So by scaling things to a different size, it's something that you know but returns to you in a different way. And by making something useless and a bit different from how you use it, like an everyday piece of architecture, like a park bench or something, you start to think about the world in a different way. And specifically in this workshop, we meet different traders. So we talk to the baker, we talk to the forklift driver, and you really understand their lives in the back of house, and you don't really often get these exchanges as you come to the market.
So what do they think of you as an artist, Timothy?
Surprisingly, they're very open, and people are very generous at the market and really want to share their stories. And so they understand our role as artists is to understand this place and present it back in a different way. And for me, drawing out these histories that they have. So the traders that we have met have been very understanding, although sometimes you get security walking past and looking very strangely as you convulse in a choreography workshop.
So are you going to make your work from materials you get from the market?
No, we're interested in the form of what we see on the market, so not the material of it itself. So we're interested in the shape and these familiar shapes you see every day in the city rather than the actual material of it.
Well, it's exciting. We'll have to see what happens. Now, I've found another artist that I've pulled away from her deep thoughts, and that is Hiromi Tango. Now, I believe that you are very interested in food, but also interested in brains.
Yes. My research over the years has been focused on how arts engagement could assist for the brain health and emotional development. Particularly for this project for Queen Victoria Market, I'm interested in to see market as a brain.
So how are you going to show this? How are you going to create a work from this?
Well, I don't want to unwrap too much, but interestingly, I'm thinking about the title of the work, Wrapped. And so as you can see, wrapped, there are so many meanings, but in the Australia context, wrapped is over joyful and really great, and we are going to be wrapped, the ocean of the market and the brain.
Thanks very much. So here I am in the deli hall of the Queen Vic Market, and I've managed to corner one of the stall holders. So who are you?
Michael Kaiafa from M&G Kaiafa, probably best known for our breads.
And they're fantastic breads. So what do you think about this arts project that's going on? Have you noticed them walking around?
I have noticed a few young artists walking around, and a few ideas have been thrown at me, and it sounds pretty exciting.
So are you keen on art?
Yeah, I'm keen on most different art, but not the traditional run-of-the-mill art. Yeah.
So this kind of edgy conceptual stuff is probably going to be right up your street?
It will, yes, for sure.
And have you got any tips for them, where they might find something that might inspire them here in the market?
I said look at the love stories in the market. So that was my tip.
I love that. Thanks very much. So there you have it, the Public Art Melbourne Biennial Lab. What's it going to be? We'll have to wait and see. But it's going to be a bit of architecture. It's going to be a bit of food. It might be some dreaming. And hopefully there's some love stories. From the Queen Vic Market in Melbourne, bye for now.
That's Fiona Gruber, and we don't need to wait and see because Fiona made that story back in June and we've kept it on ice for this very moment. The event is now up and running. It's called What Happens Now, and it's happening across the Queen Victoria Market until the 23rd of October. It's all part of the Melbourne Festival, and you'll find details of the works and information about guided tours and the talks that are on at the Biennial Labs website. And there's a link actually on our webpage. So if you go to this story on Books and Arts, you'll find what you're looking for.
Into each life some rain must fall, but too much is falling in mine.
Yeah, that was a big hit for the Ink Spots back in 1946 in Australia, which is the setting for Dark Fires Shall Burn, the debut novel of the very experienced Sydney writer Anna Westbrook. Fires of passion and pain are burning in Sydney back in 1946, mostly in inner city suburbs where poverty and crime coexist. Anna Westbrook is speaking to Kate Evans, who asks Anna about one of those suburbs, Newtown.